"Excuse me, gentlemen, is anyone sitting here?" The men looked up from their table with the resigned irritation of travelers who thought they'd managed to get three seats together in a first-class compartment without having to endure the company of a stranger. One of them, youngish and tall, with a nose he could have used to spear pickles out of a jar, peered rather pointedly over his gold-framed spectacles at the adjacent table across the aisle. It had only a middle-aged, middle-class couple in occupation, although they'd sprawled their iPads and iPhones and papers across the surface to stake their claim. I followed his gaze and produced a rueful smile. "I don't go by train very often," I confided as I slid into the remaining seat. "But when I do, I'm afraid I really can't face backwards. Gives me motion sickness." "Ah," said the man, "have you thought of taking hyoscine hydrobromide of some kind? It's available at any pharmacy without a prescription." Before I could answer that, one of the others, an older man with a bushy mustache and an upright spine of an ex-soldier, cut in with, "Or antihistamines. A little less effective, perhaps, but fewer side effects. Hyoscine may make you drowsy, my dear." Instinctively, I glanced at the third man. He was small and sturdy, his hands and face tanned as much by wind as by sun. He grinned at me from under thick black eyebrows. "Hey, no use looking to me for advice. These two guys are the physicians. The ginger tea my mom used to make whenever I got sick, that's all I could suggest." My first thought was American, but the slightly Scottish inflection on the word "about" tipped him farther north. "Is that a Canadian accent I hear?" The bushy eyebrows wiggled like two hairy caterpillars on his forehead, and his grin, if anything, widened. "Good call," he said. "Most folks over here mistake me for a Yank." "Ah, well, I shouldn't let it worry you," I returned his smile. "Some folk over here mistake me for a lady." It's from the opening of Hounded, one of the stories collected in For the Sake of the Game, stories inspired by the Sherlock Holmes canon. It's been a while since I've reviewed a book that celebrated the world of Sherlock Holmes, like the now long ago but ageless detecting characters of Agatha Christie and Rex Stout. The milieu of Sherlock Holmes continues to find new readers for the Conan Doyle, Victorian, and Edwardian series, and perhaps more importantly, continues to spur new fiction from contemporary writers, not the least the Memoirs of Mary Russell and Sherlock Holmes series, still penned by the co-editor of this book, Laurie B. King. Well, other reviewers have pointed out that this is a quasi-biennial collection of Sherlock Holmes-inspired stories, imagine that, edited by Sherlockian stars in their own right, Laurie B. King and Leslie S. Klinger. As one writes, quote, "This is an every 2 years treat, as evidenced by my reviews of the previous collections in this quasi-series, A Study in Sherlock, In the Company of Sherlock Holmes, and Echoes of Sherlock Holmes." Today's collection, For the Sake of the Game, is a collection of short stories that delve into the world of Sherlock Holmes. It's no outlier, though. Rather a valid and even solid part of the genre we've long considered as mystery fiction in the book world. And the writers collected here are certainly above average. You will have heard of many of them, starting with Peter S. Beagle, but including as well Reese Bowen, Tony Kellner, and Zoe Sharp, among others, each of them taking a different tack to integrate the Holmes persona into their work. And not only are the writers often stellar, because of the variety of storytelling at which each of them excel, they offer us the opportunity to see Holmes at different stages of his life and different emotional states of living, as it were. There is a young Holmes, barely 20 years of age, we're told, already acutely observant, clearly a musical genius, this is where the Stradivarius comes into his life, and still quite green as he navigates the criminal world into which he is inevitably drawn. This is a time in Sherlock Holmes' fictional life when he can still be captivated and utilized by a beautiful and engaging young woman. This is a Sherlock Holmes who is twixt in between his strong sense of self and the nagging need to call upon the help of his older brother, Mycroft, who is wealthier and much better connected. It's a Sherlock Holmes we recognize, and yet a Holmes that we haven't yet met, at least not through the best-known Sherlockian literature. In another story, we glimpse a Holmes who is older, wiser in the ways of the criminal world, but no less intrigued by the crimes he encounters. Indeed, in the story The Walk-In, a Sherlockian character has dropped the usual name by which we know him for the oh-so-British moniker Kingsley. Kingsley is a sharp-eyed employee of a government British agency whose memory of past cases makes him both ruthlessly adept at solving the case at hand, that of a poisoner plying his trade in contemporary London at the behest of shady East European governments, and yet well-trained at another skill, this time sleight of hand, such that Kingsley Sherlock poses successfully in our tale as a soothsayer of some local note. And Sherlock Holmes is a robot? Yep, that idea turns up here as well, set in that classic British setting of the Oxford College landscape. It's a short story that is as odd and beguiling as it may seem upon first notice. But my favorite story, and I join here many other reviewers, is the final story. We just read from it at our opening, Hounded, which is, yep, a retelling of the deservedly famous Hound of the Baskervilles mystery by Sherlock Holmes creator Arthur Conan Doyle. Like Doyle's atmospheric tale, Hounded is set on the moors of northern England, featuring a lonely, windswept landscape full of body-sucking mires and creepy manor servants. But this hound is set in the current day. Our protagonist is on a super-secret mission that we're not clued into as she opens our story on what else, as you heard, a crowded British train churning its way into the north. Dr. Watson makes his appearance in the first few pages, and you'll not be surprised to find Sherlock showing up as well, in disguise, and of course with cryptic advice to our heroine. Interestingly, the core Holmes characters we've come to know from the many films and TV series, not to mention all the books, are not that common in these pages. This truly is a collection of Sherlock Holmes stories, as Holmes's otherwise constant companion, Dr. Watson, appears only once in a while. He does indeed appear in Hounded, but he doesn't show up everywhere else in the book, which makes the book even more Sherlock dense. All of that said, I'm not as captivated by these stories as I am by the original Conan Doyle writings. The original author once again triumphs in his, in this case, development of a fictional character. Try as they might, others can come close and poke at personality quirks and themes the original author did not explore. But that spark of surprise that Arthur Conan Doyle somehow managed isn't necessarily in these pages, perhaps because these Sherlock Holmeses are expected to explore aspects of Holmes's world that Conan Doyle didn't choose to explore. That said, I do think enough of this collection to recommend it to your attention, especially the final tale, Hounded, that I want to return to close our review. When we last left our heroine, she had just walked in on that group of men traveling north as well as she was, somewhere into the north of England. Turns out they all are going to a godforsaken place on the moors, and we rejoin our story. The little man laughed out loud at that, and after a moment, the two doctors allowed themselves a small twist of the lips that might have passed for amusement. The Canadian, meanwhile, leaned across the table with a weathered hand outstretched. Henry Baskerville! I took his hand, not without caution, and received a robust shake that threatened to bounce my shoulder out of its socket. Still, at least there were two professionals nearby who could have put it back for me. Charlie Fox, I said. Nice to meet you, Henry. The beaky-nosed doctor cleared his throat, murmured, "It's Sir Henry, actually." "Really? Should I curtsy?"
No, not on my account, I assure you. A few months ago, I was farming in Alberta province. Then my uncle, Sir Charles Baskerville, died suddenly, and now I find myself a baronet with a county estate in Devonshire.
I thought your last name rang a bell. There was something unusual about your uncle's death, wasn't there? Enough to make the national news, anyway.
Ah, you're referring to the pet story of my family, the hellhound. Sir Henry smiled again at his own pun.
I've heard of it ever since I was in the nursery, but I never thought of taking it seriously until now.
The doctor's eyes flicked toward each other.
Only a tiny movement, but I caught it nonetheless. Sir Charles died of dyspnea, difficulty of breathing, and cardiac failure, the beaky nose doctor said. The post-mortem examination showed long-standing organic heart disease. Indeed, at his medical practitioner, I had urged him to seek specialist advice about his health, but he gave a shrug. I'm sure you did everything you could for your patient, I offered. Urging him on is one thing, but I don't suppose you could exactly truss him up like a Sunday roast to deliver him to Harley Street, could you? He unbent enough to introduce himself then as Dr. James Mortimer, but left the older of the men, who quickly followed suit, even though recognizing him was the reason I'd begged the spare seat at their table in the first place. Dr. John Watson! I manufactured a reasonable facsimile of surprise. Of course, I said. I follow your blog, The Exploits of Sherlock Holmes, Consulting Detective. If even half of it is true, it makes fascinating reading.
If anything, I tend to play down some of the more sensational aspects of Holmes's cases, Watson said, looking almost sheepish.
A firm nudge against my leg underneath the table had me looking down to find a curly-haired spaniel eyeing me dolefully. I stroked the dog's ears and said, "Do I take it there might be a hint of a sensational going on in Devon?"
"Indeed not," Watson denied quickly, "or Sherlock Holmes himself would be traveling with us."
"Which plainly he is not," Mortimer added, trying for an air of nonchalance that he failed to pull off. For the sake of the game, stories inspired by the Sherlock Holmes canon. It's quite an interesting read, especially that last story, Hounded. It's available at all of our fine local libraries, including the West Lafayette Public Library.